Zettel. With James Humberstone.
Welcome to Music Zettel, the podcast about new pedagogies and how they might affect music teaching and learning in the 21st century. That's especially what it's about today, because we're going to look at the fifth stream of elective sessions that you can do at the Presentation of Learning for my Technology in Music Education course at the Sydney Conservatorium of Music. And that presentation is today, Friday the 19th. The day is here. We've got about 200 people signed up so far. I'm going to release this podcast, well, you'll know now because you're listening to it, about 9 o'clock in the morning, Australian time, and we'll be all go. We've got a couple of dress rehearsals on Zoom. Are they called dress rehearsals? They might be pajama rehearsals, the way some of my students turn up on Zoom. No, I'm sure that they'll be making a massive effort for the public, the international public today. We're very much looking forward to seeing people online. And of course, if you're listening to this podcast after the day that it comes out, don't feel like you've wasted your time. You haven't wasted your time, because you can actually still, well, first, listen to the amazing things I'm going to share with you in the next 10 minutes or so, but also go to all of the students' blogs. And there, the great majority of them share the resources, their reflections on their learning, the outcomes, how they think anything they've learned can be applied in the future music classroom. It's excellent stuff. I'm in the middle this week of marking, and for once, it doesn't feel like marking, probably because I haven't actually put any numbers to anything yet, but I'm just reading and having a great time, seeing what they made of my lectures over 12 weeks, when we've done everything from just simple skills. How do you plug a microphone into a device? How do you point it at what's MIDI? How does a synthesizer work? How do I multi-track a song? Where does video come into this? What if I want to create a tutorial video with a close-up on the hand on the fretboard, but a picture of me presenting, holding the whole instrument? How do I cut those things together and synchronize them? And all those kind of useful digital asset-making skills. But then we've pushed that further into new pedagogies and new musical cultures, especially technology-based, but not exclusively technology-based, musical cultures and practices. And that's what the stream's about today. So nicely segued. Hey, did you enjoy the opening music? That's Thongophone. You probably heard it and thought, well, that's a lovely bit of Thongophone playing. I love it. It's one of those things where you wish, even though podcast is an audio medium, you wish that for this bit, we could just be vodcasting. Bit of video in there. You need to head to the website that I'm going to talk about later in this podcast, because you can actually see the players playing that Thongophone duet. One thong at each end of the instrument. Big plumbing white piping between the players. Exciting stuff. But before I get on to Thongophone and other extremely sensible, important instruments, let me just mention, so this is called New Pedagogies and Technologies, this stream. And it's really just all about, you can come at it from either angle, or, you know, I guess you can do both, but you don't have to, you can come at it from either angle. So what's a new thing? What's a new way that people are thinking about teaching and learning? And I guess, I mean, terms like blended learning and flipped learning and online learning, those things, they've been around for, 5 or 10 years now, since the internet stopped being crap, basically. But actually, the experience of doing teaching and learning through websites, streams, audio, video content, digital resources, multimedia resources, okay, it's been around for a while now, but it's still new. And you know how we know it's new following lockdown? Because many of us aren't very good at it. So, I'm speaking as somebody here who has been doing this stuff for years and has got some skills and owns some nice equipment and has got a computer that doesn't fall over when it is required to do lots of video rendering. And yeah, I still really felt like my preparation time was more than quadrupled. I can remember a couple of times where I started prepping at 9 o'clock on Monday morning for lectures that I was giving on Friday, on Thursday morning or on Wednesday afternoon, and literally spent 2.5, 3 days making digital resources, trying to make Canvas, which is our university's LMS, you know, be really easily followed, making sure that even if I was presenting a synchronous, so a together live online lecture, that I could be stepping my students through the content in the LMS as well, any places that I wanted it to become student-centered and get them doing experiential stuff, that it was fully resourced, easy to download. And that creation and level of work took forever. And some of those lectures actually didn't end up working as half as well as I thought they would. So, you know, I mean, yeah, baptism by fire for all of us, in wasn't it, in so many ways. And I think they were saying, a report that I saw in The Guardian this morning, saying that 40% of school children in the UK hadn't had any contact with, or very little contact with, their normal classroom teacher through the whole of the lockdown, which is like massively shocking, because I have to say, I've got a child in a public primary school here in New South Wales, Australia, and he heard from his teacher every single day digitally via, they use Google Classroom. And usually every second day, at least, they'd be live on Zoom, having a chat, catching up, creating a little bit of community feeling, and lots of back and forth through the Google Classroom every day as well, you know, chats between the kids and stuff. So yeah, ooh, I mean, yeah, not new, but new, very much new. Other things that we look at in terms of new pedagogies, look, we start off actually with a look at social media and the kind of the always on digital world and what the good and the bad is of that. And I really don't try to hide the bad. I'm not one of those technology education people who ever treats it like a silver bullet. In fact, my saying is, please be enthusiastic cynics, i.e. I don't want you to just outlandishly reject this stuff. And we know there's good research out there that actually shows that, you know, just getting hands-on with new technologies and mucking around with them is motivating for students to a certain extent. There shouldn't be any surprise there, really. If you put $1,000 shiny thing in a kid's hands, of course they're going to be a little bit excited about it. But you know, there's a value to getting down and experimenting with these things, but then you shouldn't necessarily expect it to improve teaching and learning. And there's a certain amount of evidence. I think one of my colleagues at the University of Sydney, Peter Goodyear, Professor Goodyear, has written about this in terms of the fact that quite often when a new, let's use the word, innovative technology comes in, that actually teaching and learning kind of takes a bit of a plunge while we all muck around with it and try and work out how it works. And you need those people on the sharp end, that's the enthusiastic bit, jumping in and doing new things. I've worked with lots of people like that over my life. Katie Wardrobe, I know many of you follow her amazing Midnight Music podcast, thinking about Samuel Wright. I think he's over in Vienna now, but before that, we used to teach together here in New South Wales. So, you know, people like that who are constantly experimenting and playing with the new talent, those are the people we need, because they can go and have the successes and then we can steal all their best ideas. But of course, they're also having all the stuff ups and realizing that sometimes it's too much hard work and doesn't work, or that, you know, kids don't get out of it what you thought they were going to. So we look at a lot, the whole social media thing like that, as I say, from both the positive and the negative, and the network learning and all that kind of stuff. We also look at ideas of remix culture, mashup culture, sampling. We look at copyright and in relation to both as it works for a school teacher, but also sampling culture in music. We're really lucky to have Ethan Hine in residence virtually from New York with us for the last week of semester. So he got into a lot of stuff about sampling in hip hop instrumentals, which is something I've been interested in actually for years, since I first heard a paper back in 2013 when I joined the Sydney Con from my colleague there, Charles Fairchild, who wrote the book on Danger Mouse's Grey album and gave another lecture maybe the same year or the next year on a Girl Talk album. So, yeah, really, really interesting stuff. And when you get into that stuff, you realize how, especially if you're a classically trained musician, as I am, that, you know, you've got to actually really think about music in completely different ways. You can't, there's no point really bringing very much of what you know, because you just won't understand what is difficult and complex and technical and sophisticated about it. And so that's a perfect point actually to make, to move to the final sort of area of thought that we explore in the course, which is sort of an extension from other courses that I teach at the Con, where, which is kind of like, I guess, probably the big Humberstone theme. And that's the idea of trying to develop music educators who are music pluralists, who love finding the sophistication in all musics and don't other musical cultures that they don't understand. And so in this area, all of these different musics made with technology that we have around us now, including hip-hop, including electronic dance music and the electronic music's many, many subgenres. And of course, nowadays, lots and lots of cross-genre music, which includes a lot of technologically made music. And I just think it's exciting. Get into it. Have a listen. My big rule for myself is, if you don't like a new musical genre, you probably don't understand it. So make yourself go and find out more about it and listen to it more until you do. And then I guess if you still don't like it, fair enough, because at least you've educated yourself well about it and decided you don't like it. But I think as educators, we've really got a responsibility, especially around the big musical cultures that the kids coming into our classes are so involved in. Because if we don't do that, for, I mean, purely on a practical reason, forget philosophical reason, on a practical reason, if we don't understand a little bit about the music that they're listening to all the time, how are we going to make the most of their prior learning at that second they walk into our class? What are we going to do with their prior knowledge? So to me, it's inspiring. It's opportunities. And to that end, let me tell you about a few projects that will be shared in Stream 5. And as I say, if you're not there for the presentation of Learning Online, you can go to these students' websites, you can look up their projects and find out more about them. And if you go to Bridget Holden's blog, you will find that she has made a documentary, I think it's about 15, 20 minutes long, on learning about electronic music. She actually gets into the history of electronic music and then some of the technologies that are involved in the making of it. I'm not going to excerpt it because I was going to put a little excerpt of it in after I watched it today, but I realized that the bits that I'd like to do with a snippet of her talking and then some music probably are a little bit copyright difficult. So I'm not going to do that. But I would say go there. It's especially interesting I think it's especially interesting because as a student, she's one of our hip students at the Con. Just for those of you who are thinking, what is that, like hip as in half of hip hop? No, the opposite. In fact, it means historically informed practice. So she's an early music performer, and so somebody who really enjoys listening for enjoyment to electronic music and has now had the opportunity to learn about some of the technology around it and has decided that she wants to go and fill the gap. Let's go and learn about the culture. Let's go and learn about the history. And so that's what she's done. She's actually made a doco. The next project that I want to talk to you about in this episode is Josiah Lowes. Now, I don't know if you can remember, on Tuesday I mentioned a project by Mitchell Tour, who has designed a music video game, or spent lots and lots of time, incredibly ambitious idea. And Josiah, similarly ambitious. His idea was to create a new social network for music making, somewhere where, let's say, you wanted to do a virtual album or a virtual choir mashup, you know, those kind of things I was talking about in episode 4, that you could actually go hang with friends, make new friends, work on music projects together. So a whole network, think of it as like a cross between Facebook and Insta, and yeah, maybe like Facebook, Insta, but where instead of images, it's music and tracks and recording. And do you know what? He's done it. He's actually mocked the whole thing up. built a load of different technologies, plugins on top of a WordPress frame. We've installed it recently, a copy of it. He'd built it running a virtual server on his laptop. We've chucked that up on my server. So in addition to being able to see his presentation and ask him questions about it and how he thinks it could be used and how he thinks it could change music making and music learning, you will also be able to log in and actually have a play around with it if you like. So Elective Stream 5, or go and check out Josiah Lau's blog if you want to learn more about that. Two other projects that I don't sadly have anything to play you from, simply because they're not up on their blogs yet, but I'm sure they will be by tomorrow. The first is Lara Dodds. Now, Lara originally was also thinking about doing the virtual choir because she'd been involved in a bit of stuff like that herself, but then got the remixing bug. I like to think it was because when I taught the remix lesson, I decided, thank you very much, Ableton. You've given away live for 60 days or 90 days as part of the trial during the COVID lockdown. So please could we all get that, got all the students to get that in advance, download it in advance and install it. And then basically scaffolded a whole load of loops and samples from different songs, showed them how difficult it is to remix those songs just using a normal DAW that doesn't automatically do things like beat mapping and pitch adjustment and things like that, and then showed them how much easier it was to do it in Ableton, although still not, you know, just a case of chucking in things and pressing a button and off it goes, as I think some people often think making a remix or doing a mashup is just easy because the software does most of the hard work. Anyway, if you read most of the students' blogs, you'll find that they were both pleased to see what they could do and challenged by how difficult it was. So tick, that one was definitely a success, that particular week's lecture. And Lara has taken it upon herself to remix Vienna Teng's Never Look Away, and to do that as a learning process. But to do that whole, you know, I don't know if you've seen those videos like four producers, one sample, or four producers, one remix, and that kind of idea that you get a bunch of internet celebrity producers to all do something with a sample or all do a remix of a particular track. Lara's given herself the challenge of doing several remixes herself of one track. So, and that is that Vienna Teng's track. So really looking forward to seeing that. The other project I'm going to just speak about quickly is, if you go and have a look in Yue, who also anglicized name Emily Chang's website, the amazing thing about Emily this year is she was living in China and accepted into our Masters of Teaching program and couldn't leave China because obviously that's where they were in lockdown first. Couldn't leave China, couldn't come to Australia. And we managed to get online learning up and going, but probably not in a particularly great way while we were all still in the classroom. I really think she got a bit of a second-rate experience for the first 3 weeks, and probably her learning experience has improved since we all ended up online. And she's done an absolutely terrific job of keeping up with everything that's been going on from a different country in a second language, and it's been really exciting seeing the projects that she's been working on as a master's student, working on two projects simultaneously and related. So one of them is that she's just really interested in the 21st century pedagogies that we've looked at and how they relate to music pedagogies used in Chinese music classrooms. And I actually just got off Zoom with Emily only an hour ago today, chatting about her projects and the idea of surface learning and deep learning. And she has found that in the more kind of traditional structured music teacher-led classes, that there's more kind of surface learning going on, and that in some of the examples that she's come up with of international schools teaching with some of these newer pedagogies, that there is more deep learning going on, but it doesn't necessarily follow. She did find examples from what you would expect to be progressive institutions of stuff that perhaps wasn't just on the surface level, but wasn't really going on at the fully deep level of learning either. Not completely experiential, still maybe very heavily teacher-led. And it is interesting, isn't it, as a practitioner? You know, I like to think of myself as kind of A1 on the experiential learning scale. But actually, when I stop and think about a lot of my own lessons, and especially in my first, you know, 5-6 years as a classroom music teacher, I was probably painfully teacher-led. I probably did way too much talking and not enough musicking. And I'm certain that I'm still guilty of it sometimes now, you know, even at a tertiary level. So very interesting viewpoint there from a Chinese student who is still in China. Absolutely amazing. And the last thing, well, it's all the way back to the Thongophone now. So Larissa Newhoff and Lucy Devine have partnered up on a project. And what they wanted to imagine is, after we did our week on the maker movement, they wanted to think about what it would be like if you could actually create an ensemble, an actual real proper instruments, not just, you know, garbage instruments. Oh, look, there's a tin can and I can hit it with a fork and it makes a donkey sound and, you know, wow, that's amazing. But actually instruments that you could actually perform pieces of real repertoire on. And so they've spent weeks and weeks now. If you've been following the SCM TME hashtag, that's Sydney Conservatorium of Music, Technology and Music Education, if you've been following that hashtag on Twitter, you'll have seen lots of tweets from them with their research as they've gone and building first versions of different instruments and things like that. And now they've developed a whole website where they provide step-by-step instructions for creating 3 instruments and then examples of them playing those instruments. You can hear another one at the moment. That's Lucy playing the flute that she developed. And I will save the last example, which is some handmade ukulele with Larissa playing it for the end of the podcast, the finishing music today. And of course, that Thongophone that you heard at the start, that's part of their project as well. So do jump on their website and check that out. The Maker Movement lecture I mentioned earlier in this micro season, we weren't able to do as much of the kind of Arduino, Raspberry Pi, electronics, makey-makey stuff as we've done in the past. But we were able instead to go and look at ideas of reverse garbage and actual instrument building and things like that, and to work with Phil Nanolowy, from a school that I'm not going to mention for privacy reasons. But that interview I'm going to provide, because it's inspired so many of the students, as you would have seen if you remember Kira's music, Love Generation, her cover of Love Generation that I mentioned in episode 3, and several of the others have really taken a lot away from that whole maker movement. And I think that week that we did that, after the interview, we had a Flipgrid going with students spamming crazy instruments they were making in their homes. It was a really successful one. And so with Phil's permission, I'm going to share that video. And with permission from another of my students, Caitlin Sandiford, I'm going to be sharing some of her research. She's doing a research master's on the maker movement in music education. So if you're still a little bit confused about what it is, I've asked her to read out her definitions from her ongoing literature review. So I'm going to have that. I'm going to have a little bit of a video that she made for me on her more kind of techie Arduino-based project. And I'm going to have Phil's interview. So that's a couple of bonus episodes that are going to come, even though today is essentially the end of our micro season. 5 episodes in 5 days. I've got a couple of little bonuses, and those will be coming out over the next week. So keep an eye out for those in the stream. I hope that you've enjoyed that. And I hope you've enjoyed me talking about all of the different subjects that we covered in this course and all the different ways that my students have responded. I'm terribly proud of them and of all of us for managing to have a successful unit of work in a very, very weird, strange world that we live in lockdown situation at the moment. And, you know, hope that I see you, many of you at the event. But if I don't, you know, see you wherever I do see you. So the last thing to say is if you would like to join us online at the presentation of learning, or if you would like to look at the student websites, then you just need these following addresses. So first, the student websites via my blog is bit.ly, that's bit.ly, / all caps, SCMTME 2020. That's SCMTME 2020. And if you would like to get a free ticket, you've probably only got a couple of hours left until we shut that one down. If you would like to get a free ticket to the presentation of learning from 5:30 p.m. Friday the 19th, that's today when you're listening to this, if you listen to it the day it comes out, 5:30 Sydney time, then the shortcut for that is bit.ly/ invent ideas, with each word capitalized, capital I-N-V-E-N-T, capital I-D-E-A-S, bit.ly/ invent ideas. All right, enough of that. Thanks so much for listening to the podcast in this micro season. I'm playing you out with some homemade ukulele from Larissa. And thanks very much again for listening and participating in the subject. Send me messages, tweet me, ask questions via the blog. I'd love to hear from you. Bye.
Music Zettel was written, presented, and produced by James Humberstone.
At the moment, I only have two strings, so don't hold that against me.